This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. A day after Mardi Gras. We're going to be checking in with quite a few folks to see how it went from their perspective. In the noon hour, we'll visit with Walt Leger from New Orleans and Company. We broadcasted live from there yesterday morning, and we want to thank them for the accommodation. We always have a great time there. It's a great place to broadcast from. A lot of people out on the street. Really surprised me with the shortened route and smaller parades and things of that nature. People came out. They wanted to tradition to continue. They wanted to participate, and they did so, and I think it was a huge success. We'll visit with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications at GNO Inc., and he has a special guest, Thomas Neihardt, the founder and executive chairman of Posigen. We'll talk with those gentlemen. Michelle Corsault joins us, executive director of French Quarter Management District. We'll check in with the French Quarter to see what their thoughts were about Mardi Gras. And we start out with Arthur Hardy, with the Times-Picayune and editor and publisher of the Mardi Gras Guide. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Happy Lent.
Absolutely. Still recovering a little bit. Still a little fuzzy, Arthur.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, yeah. Did the Rex ball last night and get ready for ashes at noon at St. Anthony Church on Canal Street, a tradition each year.
Over at St. Anthony's, huh? There you go.
Yep. I have an account with St. Anthony. I prepay for things that I lose, and I pray to him, and I always find my stuff, but I have to be sure to pay up. You know, he might stop helping me.
So, Arthur, lots of twists and turns, obviously, with the SEER 1 rating starting, going back to January 1 event, that tragic event, and, you know, the victims of that are still in our thoughts and our prayers and our minds and their surviving families. We're really changed the course of a lot of things for us. You know, we go through a snowstorm in advance of the Super Bowl. We have to redo a lot of what we're doing for Mardi Gras as it relates to the special event assessment rating, SEER 1. Your thoughts on how that was executed?
I think beautifully. And as I have said all along, many of the safety measures that were in place, I don't think we ever saw, you know, and that was a good thing. If you just looked at the parade, you wouldn't know anything was different. Now you looked outside the parade, you could see enhanced barricades and police presence and all. But it was an ordinary Mardi Gras when you subtract the rain out Sunday, and those parades did get to parade on Tuesday, and then, of course, yesterday, which I really feared we wouldn't be able to have any parades. I'm so glad that we did. You know, Jefferson canceled, Orleans did an abbreviated route, and no bands for the most part. But I think it was a very successful Mardi Gras season. I really do, and a safe one. Now, going forward, you know, what will next year look like? I'm betting we might not be a SEER 1 again, and maybe we don't want it to be. You know, all of these safety measures come at not just a financial cost, but a cost to tradition. You know, how much do we want to change? You can never be 100% safe, you know that. But how, you know, for 5% more safety, do you give up 50% of tradition? And we didn't this year. And going forward, I hope we don't. But I just think it was a great year, and I really do.
Well, it's a delicate balance for sure, and obviously they should do an after action to see what was worth their while, what wasn't worth their while. Look at historically where the problematic areas are along the route and figure out how they can best address that. Yesterday, with the abbreviated version of Mardi Gras, first time ever for Rex, I think, to toast at Pascal's Manali. How did that go?
It went well. The stands there were much more elegant than I thought they would be, and it's guaranteed that that Rex would be able to salute his queen, his court, and that they would be able to see the parade and then get ready for the ball that night. The last couple of years, that hasn't happened. By the time Rex got to the Intercontinental with a toast of Vince's 1992, the court had to leave because they had to get ready for that night. So it worked well. And the parade ended at, as we say, Calliope, as everybody else in the world says, Calliope. We took a left there and then went right back to the den. But the crowds were thick. You couldn't get a good feel for, was there real enforcement about tents and canopies and open flame containers, because all that was taken away anyway. The portalettes, you know, the weather dictated compliance, if you will, as opposed to enforcement. So I don't know, next year we'll have to see how that goes, but it wasn't an issue yesterday. Friendly crowds, I think they were happy just to have a parade on Fat Tuesday. Again, we're talking downtown New Orleans. We know Met already canceled, and I'm still hoping those August and the trucks have a chance to parade at some other point.
Well, I don't know that you're ever going to get rid of the tents totally and the open flame grills. I saw a number of open flame grills around Josephine and St. Charles, where we were broadcasting from. Mm-hmm. And I also saw the tarps that were put out in an attempt to save their piece of geography. One of the things that was a little disappointing is that a lot of folks just left those old tarps there, and when the wind started blowing, they started going down the road, and they weren't policing their own area that they had set up. But you're never going to change that. I mean, that's just the realities of Mardi Gras, in my view.
Yeah, I think you're right. But on balance, you'd have to say this was a very successful carnival. You know, if for no other reason than we had no safety incidents, and you don't know if we would have had any anyway. I mean, how do we know? These things aren't you don't plan for that happening. But after the Bourbon Street incident, we would have been foolish not to enhance the safety precautions. But I don't know how you could say this was anything other than a successful carnival season. I think hotel occupancy was healthy, maybe in the mid-90s. You're almost never going to get 100%. But everyone I've spoken to, crew captains, riders, have said, man, this was really a good one. You know, maybe not the greatest crowds ever, but very, very solid.
Arthur, it occurred to me I got to watch probably six parades, and a lot of parades have more floats this year than they've had last year, which requires them to have other elements in the parade in between each one of those floats, as I think is how the ordinance reads.
Correct.
They're getting long. And, you know, you had some parades not getting to the end, the last float not getting to the end until after midnight, having started at 6:30. And a 5.5 hour, 6 hour ride is a long ride.
It is, and this is a problem that almost appears to have no solution. You know, I guess unless we mandate a maximum number of, which we kind of have in place, but it's not enforced really. The parades have to either move more quickly or have fewer elements in them. And you know, we haven't had that many breakdowns the last few years. Tractors are maintained better. Tires now almost can't be flat, you know, so you don't hear about float breakdowns most of the time stopping a parade. We did have a problem, the chaos float on Thursday night that got the wheels got hung up in a manhole cover in the middle of the street, and it was impossible to move the float over the way. So that's the exception issue. Generally, it's not breakdowns that cause parades to be late. It's too many elements in the parade or the pace of the parade. And the pace can be controlled, you know, within reason. You can't have bands running down the street, but you can have a good pace. You can be sure that every float doesn't stop to toast someone. I mean, things like that are manageable. But still, you know, if you have 120 units in a parade, it's going to take several hours for it to pass. And if you're the third parade on a triple header, good luck.
Well, and, and that's the point, right? I mean, I think the Knight of Muses, the last float, didn't get into their ending stage area till almost 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and that's just crazy. It really is. Now, some of that, again, was caused by that breakdown.
By that breakdown, the right. Break.
Yeah, but still, it's. I mean, I don't think that delayed the parade 2 hours or anything. So we just have to really take a hard look at the scheduling of parades. Nobody wants to move their parade to another night. You know, we have tradition here, but I hope we'll take a hard look at it. And by ordinance, you cannot have more than 12 units in front of the King's float. I know of at least one parade that had more than 20. So what happens? You know, do we fine them? Is your permit in jeopardy? How do we make this better? And we've got not quite a year. In fact, Tuesday, February 17th. But you pay dues to ride on a float, and there's nobody to throw to. They've gone home. It's parade fatigue, and it's, hey, I got to go to work in the morning.
Well, you know, it would seem to me that you put a script together. You know, this is a production. You turn it into the city, and that's sacrosanct, and nothing changes.
Yeah.
You know, 1 week before the parade, here it is. That's what it is. When you get to the staging area, no ticking, no laundry. You're not on the script. You're not marching.
Well, that's how it should be.
And someone has to have the authority to do so. I mean, because everybody at the last moment decides, oh, let's go get in the parade. Sure, let's call Joe. Joe, we want to get in the parade. Sure, just come on out, I'll stick you in.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You know, we, as you know, I work for the Times for Union. They actually broke out of them, and I'm continuing to run it for another year. But they do live streaming on NOLA.com from the Picayune headquarters. So we need the lineups of the parade so we know, hey, here's the Baton Rouge band, director Joe Blow and 84 members. We need to talk about the units. So you need a lineup, right? A couple of parades. Never got a lineup. We couldn't even – so that means NOPD, people like Gary Hall, don't even know here's float one. You don't know the name of it until it's in front of you. And so, yeah, we need to tighten up on those things that says 10 days out – nothing changes. Here's the lineup. Oh, wait, you've got too many units. Somebody's got to go. Somebody's feelings have to get hurt. You have to
And I'm not trying to rain on the parade, so to speak, but the whole thing gets dragged down when everyone is not playing by the same set of rules, right?
Exactly.
I mean, quite frankly, we wouldn't have the issue with the Rex Toast if we were imposing the rules and enforcing the rules. I mean, that's the reality.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to talk about it, but it is what it is.
And, well, you're right. And I'm for less government interference in everything. But the crews some of them have brought this on themselves. If you're not going to regulate yourself, then government is going to. And that's not the way it ought to be. You know, let's all be good citizens. You're not the only parade on the street, you know.
Yeah. But I like you, I was glad that we were able to put something out on the street. Obviously, the trend continues. I completely understand what President Cynthia Lee Shang decided in Metairie. It's a different terrain, different landscape, different presentation.
Yep.
You're not in tight quarters within buildings and things like that. Makes sense to me. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. You've said that many times.
Yep. No. And if she's guilty of anything, it's being too cautious. And I'll take that any day, you know, because then you play what if. No, I think she did the right thing. And I think New Orleans did the right thing, knowing what we knew at the time. And it worked.
Absolutely. So, and they pulled it off. I have to say, the police and everybody involved pulled
fabulous.
It off masterfully. I mean, because they were the last-minute decisions made the morning of Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Create more parade for them in that short period of time. And it looked like everybody, I think they made it. If they might have been 10 minutes late, but I think they got it all the way through, which was good.
I talked to the police chief last night at the Rex Ball, and she said, you know, my goal was achieved to get everybody off the street by noon if we possibly could, and for nothing bad to happen, and it worked. But I really like her a lot. She gets it for somebody who's
absolutely.
Not familiar. And she's tough. You know, it's a tough job, as you well know. And she's not trying to make friends. She's trying to do the right thing. But I think we've got a real good chief here, and I hope whoever the next mayor is smart enough to keep her.
Can't be afraid to make a decision, that's for certain.
No,
Arthur Hardy,
no.
Always a pleasure. Why don't you take a week off, Arthur, and just
Well, I'm going to get my ashes and I'll think about it.
All right, if you won't, I will. Arthur Hardy with
Thanks.
The Times-Picayune
Unit,
editor and publisher of the Mardi Gras Guide. Have a great week. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, man.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, welcome back, folks. We are joined by Michelle Corso, Executive Director of the French Quarter Management District. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Busy time in the French Quarter, a lot of new equipment, and a lot of new procedures, policies in place. The manner in which you made yourself, you know, were able to get around in the quarter was a little different from the best that I could see. Your thoughts?
Indeed. I definitely had a lot of law enforcement presence. Certainly something that's not the everyday experience for locals or tourists. I've been visiting New Orleans since about 1999, and this is the first time that I've seen so many different uniforms in the French Quarter, but it certainly gave a sense of unity, a sense of responsiveness, and the aim was to make everyone feel more secure, no incidents, and so I think that goal was accomplished.
Now, you guys, as a state political subdivision, y'all work hard trying to represent all the different interests within the quarter, right?
Yes, that's correct. We are unique in that we really balance or aim to balance the interests of both residents and our businesses and employees, and certainly the beneficiary of all of that is our tourists who come and visit. So sometimes those interests take a lot of conversation to make sure that we really understand what residents want, what business owners need, and trying to find the happy balance between. Absolutely.
And y'all have taken on a number of projects yourself and solicited funds and lobbied the state legislature and a lot of other activities to try and make sure that not only the safety and security, but the presence of the French Quarter is maintained.
Yes, that is absolutely true. We do have a lot of support on a number of different levels. We are funded by the city, the quarter for the quarter sales tax. We're funded by state appropriations and actually are looking forward to having a federal grant this year. And so we really do take the advice and take the interests of all of those parties into consideration when we have these projects. Our purpose is to make sure that the French Quarter is safe, but really we try to make it a better place to live, work, and visit, so everybody enjoys the experience that they have.
Now, I know that you guys have taken the lead on license plate readers, security cameras, providing specialty vehicles, and just any number of pieces of equipment to try and create a more ease of administration as they engage in their enforcement activities, meaning that the security patrols that y'all have and the NOPD. What would you say is your biggest challenge today with all of that?
I think it's a challenge of again, balancing those interests. Some people respond very kindly to the security readers, the cameras, the license plate readers and cameras, and others, you know, find that a little bit intrusive. And so our position is not to go one way or the other. Our efforts are always an effort to support what is it that our law enforcement needs, what is it that our community needs to stay safe. And so we thread that needle very carefully. We communicate as best we possibly can, but it's always keeping that balance.
Yeah, and I know y'all just finished up a very important project, one that I've heard from a lot of people. They were very excited about it, and folks are going to be surprised to hear that it was streetlights. Simple like that, right?
It is. It's one of those things. Yeah, the streetlight project took many, many, many years to kind of come together, and it certainly has taken many months. We had that rush to try to put on the best shoe that we possibly could for Super Bowl, but we really prioritized making sure that the needs were attended to. And so we had almost 1,000 streetlights that needed to be inspected, a number of different parts. Some were in working order, others were not. Some had parts that needed to be replaced, poles that needed to be replaced, so many different components to it. And so the residents certainly are the winners of that project by and large, and that's really where we've received the best feedback. Our wonderful little French Quarter is lit up like a Christmas tree now, and we couldn't be more grateful.
So a lot of folks are saying, they ask the question, why did it take a Super Bowl to get this done? And it's kind of, in my view, it's a silly question. You use whatever leverage point you are presented with to accomplish something. I think the bigger question is there a plan to maintain this? We got to this point because of neglect. How confident are you that we're going to be able to keep this going?
Very confident. I'm confident that we maintain a good open communication relationship with our city partners, and we all have the same goals in mind. And so we are beginning those conversations about maintenance. We have a clean slate now. So many things were repaired for Super Bowl. And so now what does that look like? How can we attend to these things? This was the first large, let's say infrastructure project, if that's the right word, but really it was for safety and security, which is why we were granted the funds to do so. And so now, since that door is now open, we're hoping that we can have those conversations and they go well to say, okay, what does maintenance look like? How do we ensure that these things do not take another 10 years or another Super Bowl for us to attend to them? But how do we do that on a more regular basis? And so very confident. I think we've got, like I said, a great working relationship where those lines of communication are open now.
And a follow-up project or a parallel project to this, one would be surprised as well, was street signs. I don't think we were able to finish that before the Super Bowl. Where do we stand now?
That is definitely still underway. That wasn't an FQMD project, but certainly one that we communicated was a great need. Street signs, stop signs, all directional signs, wayfinding signs, all of those things are certainly important in the French Quarter. And so FQMD positions itself to make sure that we are constantly communicating with our Department of Public Work partners and making sure, hey, how can we attend to this? How can we get to this? I think last week I had on two different blocks, I don't know what's happening on those two blocks, but street signs, stop signs were down. And people would send in pictures and say, hey, this stop sign is in the street. Can we attend to it? A potential accident. How do we attend to that? And so we communicate regularly on that. So it's not an FQMD project, but it's certainly one that we are continuing to keep the lines of communication open with our partners.
Now, there seems to be a dialogue that has started in the aftermath of the New Year's Day tragic event about whether or not there should be some additional restrictions on Bourbon Street and whether or not a pedestrian-only mall should be created. And there seems to be probably five, six different factions on this issue, and who knows how many more. Where does the FQMD stand on this issue of what y'all know so far?
Well, we collected about 35 emails. The city, NOPD, and the mayor invited feedback from the community. And so FQMD reached out to our board of commissioners and their organizations, to our citizen groups, just to say, what is it that you think should happen here? How do you see this moving forward? Will this benefit or create any impediments for you? And so we gathered that feedback. There are a number of different opinions out there. FQMD can't take a position on it formally. Our job is really to make sure that those opinions are communicated. So we're delighted to be able to continue that communication. I sat in the meeting with the Teneo group that's advising the city, and they made it very plain that creating a pedestrian-only area for Bourbon Street would be the greatest effort towards safety. That would be the safest solution. And what will the residents and businesses, what risk are we willing to take? And so now, if that is the official position, and I don't think it's the official, but that is their the statement that they've put out, now it's a question of, okay, residents and citizens and business owners, how do we get there? Is there a compromise? Is there anything that we can do that's going to make this beneficial for all? And so I think this is going to be a lengthy discussion, and there will be, like you said, a variety of different opinions on it.
It would seem to me, though, and I don't know how they're going to get through this process, because if you have, I think, what y'all have north of 3,000 residents living in the quarter, is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah. So the nuances of their lifestyle, the comings and goings of how they come in and out to work, to shop, to do this, to do that, you could have a template that may be a thousand different templates for, you know, those nuances. And then you add all the businesses and how they dispose of their garbage, how they take deliveries, how they do this, how they do that, what times are the most convenient for them as they're trying to streamline businesses. You know, what hours of operation do each one of these businesses operate? I hope they're willing to go through and not a lengthy process, but a more open and transparent to gain a better understanding of what needs to be compromised on. Because you have hotels, commercial establishments, you know, you have commercial establishments of every type. It's not just bars. It's not just restaurants. You have hotels, clothing stores, antique stores, and the list goes on and on and on. And each one of them, you know, we are humans are creatures of habit, and the old habits die hard. And in order to accomplish this little thing on Bourbon Street, you're going to have a lot of old habits that are going to have to die.
You know? Indeed.
And
indeed.
I'm not so sure that there are folks willing to go to those funerals. I just don't see it.
That's well said, sir. Well said.
So it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to have someone that's going to be that is independent, that's going to pull all of this together to try and figure out, even if you know, they could do much of anything. I do believe, and I'm very optimistic that they could reach some compromise on individual, like, silos of things, of activities. And I do believe that can happen. But to just shut it down, I think, is going to be hard. And I don't disagree with the expert. I think that would be the most secure, right? I mean, it is what it is,
right.
and it doesn't change. And that's the way it would be. But not sure that everyone's willing to compromise there.
Well, I will say that the city hosted for North Rampart Street, which we did a number of different projects over there to improve pedestrian safety. And that is a larger conversation that the city actually hosted. It was by an outside group that said, okay, we're looking at the bigger picture for all of this project. What would it take? Would we need to reduce parking, the number of parking spots along Rampart, to create bike lanes, to create wider sidewalks? So a number of different questions were being asked, but that process, which the city is hosting currently, was really a deep dive. It really fostered great communications. They laid out a physical map and plan, and the attendees of that group were able to walk around and ask questions and put little post-it notes of, what about this? Have you considered that? And that feedback was well received by the group that was hosting, and they continued to tweak their proposal. And so it is possible, and the city certainly is hosting a process now that is very inclusive and is certainly very broad. But again, to hear the number of different opinions and really try to keep the number of different interests in mind is definitely going to be a difficult challenge. What I saw as the most overwhelming theme in the emails that we received, the feedback that we received, was open communication. There was a lot of interruptions, like you said, that old habits that were broken during the Super Bowl process, during following the January 1st attack, a lot of things that were immediately interrupted and changed. And there wasn't a lot of time for a lot of broad communication to residents and businesses. And so their feedback to those changes that happened right before Super Bowl was better communication. So I think, you know, the city, if they aim towards that, to have open communication and a dialogue to keep those interests in mind, that communication piece will really be the most helpful tool in the toolbox that they can use.
No doubt about it. And in the end, everyone should focus on, we just want it to be a better place. Separate and apart from the safety issue, that is just better in as many aspects as possible, right?
Absolutely.
Well, as always, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Executive Director, French Quarter Management District, thank you for the work that y'all do. I know that most, if not all, of what you do is on a volunteer basis, and we appreciate that as well. Those big checks are still not rolling in, Michelle. I know that, too.
So. No. Not that I've seen. I'll double-check the mail today to make sure.
But stay
safe. Thank you for having me. The pleasure is mine.
And have a great week. Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. So the rest of the week, there's a lot going on. We're going to be talking a little bit about President Trump's address to Congress, State of the Union address to Congress last evening. One of the longest ever delivered. And he went on and on about a number of different issues. We're trying to break a lot of those issues down so that we can talk about it in a meaningful way. Did so last night till probably about 1 o'clock this morning. A lot of material, a lot of conversation that he put out there on a number of different issues. The majority of the theme was kind of an in-your-face to Democrats, which was kind of very similar to what Joe Biden had done to Republicans. So obviously what goes around comes around. There are a lot of folks that were there that were mentioned as it relates to special interests of their stories, things that they've gone through, certain executive orders issued by the president as a result of tragic things happening to folks there, their family representatives there as well. Some folks got very upset. Some talk show folks got very upset about that and talked about it. It seems as though there's a lot of pushback on them. I think the president should have the latitude to bring up there who he desires to bring up there. If he believes that what he has done has provided a significant impact on the families of their lost ones and the remainder of the country at large, I think he should have every right to do so. Unfortunately, last evening, we began to look more and more like a third world country. Congressman Green from Texas, a Democrat, had to be escorted out of the House chamber by the sergeant at arms because he was being disruptive. Obviously, he was doing it intentionally to send a message. And obviously, that's what he wanted to be, was ejected for whatever reason. I don't know what value he thinks he brings to the forefront by doing so, but it's kind of an embarrassment, you know, as it relates to that issue. It's, if we can't act cordial and like adults within that forum, maybe it's time for some of these folks to get voted out of there. I mean, it's just embarrassing. I mean, we kind of all know, right, that the Democrats don't agree with the Republicans. The Republicans don't agree with the Democrats. And so just let it be. When you're on the losing end, elections matter. They have consequences, right? How many times have we heard those cliches? Well, one of them is you get to sit there and listen to the State of the Union address that's not going to be very kind to you if you're on the losing side. Grow up. In the end, it's really not about you, right? It's about the country. It's about all of us, collectively, the taxpayers, and what we are looking for on any given day about what we would like to see happen. One of the other things that and somebody texted in, Marjorie Taylor Greene heckling Joe Biden. I said the same thing then. It's uncalled for. Why do it? It's a joke. You become less than. The body becomes less than. There's no decorum, right? When you have a body that lacks decorum, that body is less than. You're not going to accomplish as much as you once could when you have people that are out there that are doing it. It's the same thing with the congresswoman from California that wanted to get into everybody's face at restaurants. When Trump first got elected, we've lost all sense of just acting like an adult, of respecting one another. they preach to us about respecting one another's thoughts and their ideology and this and that, the free speech, and except when it's something that's said that they don't like. So they go off the rails. And we begin to look like, you know, other bodies, government bodies, and other third world countries that are just setting off smoke bombs the other day in one of the bodies. Is that next? I mean, what is it? Where are we going to be? So much decorum y'all had on 1-6. Well, obviously, you weren't listening to what I said. That shouldn't have happened. And I also said that we should have put Trump in the rearview mirror. Well, the country decided not to. He's the president. I will give him his due. Where he does something that I think is well-footed, well-sound, you know, well-intentioned, I'll talk about it. The other things where I don't think so, that we fall short, we're less than, I'll talk about that as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back from the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications at GNO Inc. So stay with us. We'll be right back.